It's Wednesday, April 4th, 2007, and you're listening to episode 46 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 51 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and on the mics is Chad.
Howdy.
Adam.
Hi.
And John.
Hey.
Alrighty, we got three announcements to get out of the way before we get into the show.
Big stuff.
Oh, I hate announcements. They're so boring.
You're boring.
Oh. Hey, jerk, why don't you announce or something?
Okay. The first announcement is one of our listeners and also one of our forum users by the name of Chris, and on the forums he goes by Captain Crunch, is an employee of Cisco Systems, which... That part's not necessarily podcast worthy.
It's kind of cool.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
But through Cisco Systems, they apparently have a yearly bowling tournament where people sponsor them just like you would for like a walkathon or something. And the proceeds from this go to the Toronto Big Brothers and Big Sisters. And his goal for this particular event is to raise $1,000 for the charity. And he has extended a deal to the podcasting community, which is if he can raise $250 in donations specifically from gaming podcasts and gaming podcast listeners, then he will draw one of us randomly from a list, and that person is going to be given a whole bunch of stuff. And I believe it's like $30 in PDFs. I think High Moon.
Daniel Perez.
Yeah, Daniel Perez's company is throwing some stuff in. Swords
yeah,
Edge.
Yeah, throwing some stuff, as in... One from every single piece of their catalog.
Yeah, Swords. So really,
I think you know, check it out. Yeah. Make sure I'm not misspeaking.
No, he said it. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Swords Edge is throwing some stuff in,
and some stuff is in one from every.
Yeah,
single
there's item a their lot of stuff that's getting tossed into this.
Tons and tons of
so
stuff.
So if you guys are interested in winning that, or even if you're not, but you're just interested in supporting a good cause, we'll put some links to this up in the show notes. You can also find the details on exactly who is offering what. If you go to our forums and you click in the shameless plugs area and you look for a thread there entitled Chance of Winning Free Gaming PDFs. And like I said, we will also put links to this in the show notes. So if you guys want to help out a good cause and help this guy reach his goal, then you may stand to win something for yourself in the process. Second announcement is a couple of guys on our forums have started up a Blood Bowl contest or Blood Bowl League. And there is a website online, which I'll provide the link to this as well in the show notes, but it's FUMBBL.com. I have no idea what that stands for.
Fumble.
But this particular site has a Java client that will allow you to play the old Games Workshop game Blood Bowl, which is sort of like a combat football game.
Imagine all of the Games Workshop races. Only instead of, like, fighting a war, they're playing football.
And it's American-style football. Yeah. Right? We're not talking soccer. Yeah. It's American-style football. They have a Java client where you can go and play this, so it's completely free. And they are, at least I understand it to be free, and they're starting up a league. And they're, I believe they are playing right now for the Baron Von Badass Cup.
Yes, so, the Spelljammers are among the contenders, and I'm personally rooting for them.
If you're interested in getting involved in this, I will provide links to this in the show notes as well. But also you can find this in the forums in the other tabletop games area on a thread just entitled Blood Bowl, and there's information on it there. Last announcement, Chad the Travesty finally has some good news, which is we have a winner. So,
it finally has some good news? The thing was gold to begin with.
I gotta look at you. There's no good news about it.
I will also give a link to this in the show notes. The entry, it's about 500 words, and I don't want to read the whole thing.
Thank you.
But the entry is from Zanian Zero, and the gist of it is that Chad is an organization that travels through time and space dealing with horrible travesties in the role-playing universe realm. And like I said, I will give a link to his entry on the show notes so you guys can read the whole thing. It's pretty funny. And Zanian, if you will get in touch with us, you can pick one thing out of the Fear of the Boot store. And you can also give us a topic for a show, which we will cover as soon as we can work it in. So,
good work, dude.
Good work to you. Thanks to everyone for your entries. As with our previous contest, there was a lot of great stuff in there. We were actually talking earlier about the next contest, which may be something to help us have less reading. Like, for example, tell us your favorite word.
Yeah.
Or pick a number you like.
Yes. Yeah.
Pick a number between 1 and 5.
So, anyway, thanks again to everyone that entered. It was good stuff. And we will be following up on this with Zanian as soon as the show is done. John and Adam, you guys have picked up Command & Conquer 3.
We have. Oh. It is gooey, gooey goodness.
I have
Kane
not
is balder than gooey ever. Goodness.
I have played the four previous games in the series, the RTSs, that is, the CNC 1 and 2 and then Red Alert 1 and 2. I have not yet picked up CNC 3, but I was very pleased to hear that Joe Kukan is back as an actor.
He is.
I was really upset that in Red Alert 2, he was in as a director, but he played no role in the game.
Yes.
That's heartbreaking.
And according to the Red Alert 2 continuum, Nod was supposed to still have been controlling the Soviet Union up until its collapse. But they had a new guy. They had a Yuri or whatever the hell. It was like Kane, but not as cool.
Nice. Sucked.
Yeah, he
kind of looked a little like Christopher Lloyd, but not enough to be good.
Nor was he sufficiently bald to be convincing.
No.
That's very true. Although, no, you know what? I think he was bald.
He was bald,
but not as
but he
bald.
Had a big, rocking, like, well, Lenin goatee.
He was bald in the wrong way.
Right. He wasn't Joe Kukan.
Right. He was not Joe Kukan no. bald, for example.
I wonder if he walks around bald in real life or if he just shaves himself for his kids.
Do you see
rolls.
How beautiful he is? How could that man grow hair?
Mr. Clean is an agent of Nod.
That's true, he
Did
is.
Did you know that?
I didn't know.
As is the
he's
mattress
a militant.
Giant.
He's a Kane body double.
The mattress giant was a prototype for their walkers.
This game is so rife with, like, this cornucopia of nerddom. Like, there's a guy from Lost, two chicks from Battlestar Galactica. Got Billy D.
Billy D. Williams, hello.
Chick from House.
Yeah, yes. Chick from House.
Oh, Dr. Cameron.
Yeah, I definitely have to pick this one up.
I started playing as Nod, and then I just dipped over into GDI for fun, and I saw Dr. Cameron, and I was like, oh! I'm changing factions now.
I hope this one is really good, because in my mind, the mid-90s to maybe a little bit into the late 90s was the golden age of RTSs. And there were a lot of games that were around back then, like Total Annihilation, Crush, Kill, and Destroy 2, that I've never gotten the same feeling from the newer
RTSs.
This
one feels exactly like the old Command & Conquers, and it plays more smoothly and more beautifully, but yeah. That's it. There's definitely nothing in the way of innovation, which is perfect.
You know what? Fine.
Yeah,
you know
I
what?
Know.
The reviewers are pretty much split on this game. They say this game has no innovation whatsoever. Nothing changes and it's terrible. And then the other reviewers are like, this game has no innovation. Yes. Nothing changes and it's wonderful for that.
Do you guys prefer real-time strategy or turn-based strategy games?
I'm a turn-based man.
I prefer turn-based.
I prefer real-time.
I just got through playing
Age of Wonders.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic series.
If I'm allowed a cop-out, certain arenas need turn-based and certain need real-time, and that's why I like the Total War series, because
the mixture of
the
both.
Stuff that takes months to decide, like building things and training regiments,
right.
You do at your leisure, because you don't need to make that decision in 10 minutes. No war machine does. But the actual real-time battle, you're not training brigades while the guns are flying, because that doesn't go that fast.
I'm actually really upset. I'm reading through the book Shogun right now, and so I was on
You
this...
shouldn't be upset about that.
No, yeah. I'm not upset about that. No.
Extremely grateful.
No, yes. I am pleased with that. I'm not upset about that. I'm upset because that put me in a certain mood, so I dug up my old copy of Shogun Total War, and it won't run.
What?
I guess it doesn't get along with the newer versions of DirectX or my computer or
I don't know,
the video card or something, but it will not
run
right.
You should be unhappy.
Now that you mention it, I haven't tried to play it on my newer computer, but
it could be a number of things,
if it didn't work.
It doesn't
get along.
I'll
tell you what, you just play
Rome
Total War, you'll feel better.
Or Medieval 2. Medieval 2 is very, very good.
I may pick up Medieval 2. I like that series. Man, there's so many games out there I'd love to play. It's just a matter of lack of time. I mean, I've got so many games already I want to play. Twilight Princess is still unbeaten.
Chad got to the same point we're at, and then he stopped.
We're all three of us are playing Twilight Princess.
I'm playing it too.
Oh, you are too?
But I'm stuck before you guys are.
Yeah, I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but we got basically to the last dungeon, the last thing that you get to.
There's a last dungeon?
Oh, no, I gave it away. But we all have gotten to the last dungeon, and all of us are like, this is a great game, and I just don't want to play anymore. My thing is that I've gotten my $50 worth out of it. I
want to beat it, because the ending cannot live up possibly to the magic my mind has already wrapped around this game.
Well, I do have to say about Twilight Princess is that I like Wind Waker more. And
really?
It's not to say that, oh, Twilight Princess is a terrible game, and it's got all these things wrong with it that Wind Waker doesn't. And no, it's not that. Twilight Princess is great. It's a wonderful game. I've had tons of fun with it. It is just wonderful. I just think that Wind Waker had a bit more personality than Twilight Princess.
I think it's the best one of the series.
I'm loving Twilight.
I don't begrudge anybody for loving this game.
Twilight Princess.
I haven't played Wind Waker. Haven't played, what's the one? Ocarina.
You got to play Ocarina.
They're both, one of them sitting upstairs, the other will be soon. I want to play through both of them because I've enjoyed Twilight Princess so much. The thing that keeps me from finishing Twilight Princess is partially distraction with other games, but also I've had so much fun playing it that unless like a hooker comes out of the screen, the ending will not live up to what I'm expecting.
You should write a fanfic all before you finish.
There isn't a single person sitting around these mics right now that will tell you differently from what I'm about to say. Do not, under any circumstances, play The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask.
Never.
I've never played it, but everything I've heard about it, everything I've read about it, the people I've talked to have played it.
I picked it up once at the gaming store, and it burned my hand. So,
getting back to RTSs versus turn-based, I enjoy them both. There have been games like Lords of Magic and Age of Wonders.
These are games that
if I did not have to keep my mouth level with the mic, I would stand up and salute. But I will have to say that between the two, if I was on a desert island and can only have one of the two kinds of games, I would probably take the real times over the turn-based. Now, there's definitely some stuff I like about the turn-based better. Among them is the fact that you can play your army right, because in a real-time strategy game, especially if you have units with special powers, you simply cannot find the right unit, click the right power, and then click the right target unit fast enough to use these units properly.
I don't think turn-based lends itself to multiplayer as well.
Yeah, there's issues with that.
It lends itself to long multiplayer.
But inevitably, I'm always the guy who's done, and then I have to wait for Phil to take 2 hours to make his move.
Okay, that's true.
Let me answer this in two ways. Some of the newer turn-based strategy games allow you to take simultaneous turns.
Yeah. Yes. That's what I'm talking about.
But I completely agree with you.
Everybody's done. Phil, click it.
This happens to me as well. Man. I play a very efficient game. When the turn comes, I already know what I'm going to do. Click, 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 check one or two things, done. I mean, we're talking 2 minutes tops, whereas if I'm playing with like Mike or Tim or anyone else, it's just like, look at this city, clear the queue, rebuild the production queue. Mind you, this was done last turn as well. Go to the next city. No.
Flip through the Civipedia. Every unit. Oh,
what
did
is
you
a temple?
Know this?
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
45 million units are running across the land. He's got to move all of them, check all of them, doesn't remember what any of them were doing. Review every city, talk to every advisor.
I miss the advisors.
I do too.
Sir, the people, they can't help falling in love with you.
Who knew this would happen? I knew this would happen. The thing I like about the turn-based ones is that I like the level of micromanagement that it lends itself to. You can go into cities.
Yeah, I think that's what we were just talking about.
The thing,
yeah, I think it was.
Well, you were talking about efficiency.
I know. Please continue.
The point I was making, which was different than yours, was that the real-time strategy, the micromanagement in it, has a lot of hustle. It's a lot of click, click, get out, click, click, get out, click, click, get out.
RTS is Twitch gaming.
Yeah, it is Twitch gaming. Yep. And when it comes, I don't want micromanagement in a Twitch game. I don't mind Twitch games. I enjoy Twitch games. I don't want micromanagement. In a turn-based, I want the micromanagement. That's what I hate about RTSs. I enjoy RTSs, but that's what I hate about them. I hate building a town. I hate collecting resources.
Really?
I hate
that.
I want to fight
all that stuff.
I want to fight
all that stuff.
I'm there for war. I'm there for tactics. I'm there for formations. I could, you know, let the politicians deal with that. I am off to battle.
Well, and there are real-time strategy games like that.
Like the Total War series.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen real-time strategy games where all you do is at the start of the game, you have some Myth, I think, is like that. Not Myst, but Myth, M-Y-T-H, is like that.
Surely. If there was a battle in Myst, I sure as hell missed out on something.
I can't remember. The game has a longer full like title and subtitle. Like, I can't even think of the full title now, but there's a game called Myth. It's a real-time strategy game where at the start of each one, you have an objective. There's a bunch of different things going on in the land that you can take advantage of, and you move forward and win. There's no production. There's no city management. To me, personally, I love that stuff. That is what,
I wish that you could play a two-player game.
StarCraft allows
that. Well, StarCraft allowed it, but it was very clunky. We played it a couple times, and it was fun, but very clunky.
Well, you had to kind of jury-rig it to get it to work that way.
I would love it to where you could play it to where one person built the town, did the production queue, and even set up the defense, because, right. I mean, you have to fight, otherwise you'd get a little bored once you get the town running itself. Set up a defense for the town, and then built an army for the other person to go out and do things with.
If you had to pick a favorite RTS, and let's take Command & Conquer 3 off the table just because it's got the new shiny...
No, that wouldn't be it.
What would your favorite RTS be?
StarCraft. Unequivocally.
Yeah, even with all the ones that I enjoy single player, I'm still going to have to fall back on the grandfather, if you will, simply for the replayability of multiplayer. It had the smoothest role multiplayer of any RTS I've ever seen.
If you're going to sell for the grandfather, I'm going to sell for the great-grandfather, and that's going to be Dune.
The original Dune.
The original Dune, which is the very first RTS ever made. And I'm a huge Dune fan. Yep.
In fact,
and
I believe CNC was made on the engine from that game.
Yeah, it was. The ad was on the back of the CD jacket.
Mm-hmm. And there were problems with it, like you couldn't select multiple guys, and you couldn't select multiple guys at once. And they repaired a lot of that when they did Dune 2000, and they remade the game.
And they added John Rhys Davies.
They had John Rhys Davies. I remember playing it in college. It was a lot of fun, and it was one of those things that was like, wow, new. Like when we played Wolf 3D for the first time.
Right.
And, you know, we saw that for the first time. There's a whole story on that. We're just like, wow, gaming has changed. Video games have changed. This is such a wow factor. And when I played that, you know, it was the first RTS, I was just like, wow, not only is this... Well, at the time, I hadn't read Dune yet, but I was like, wow, this is really cool. But it had a certain wow factor for me. I just loved it.
Busted out.
My personal favorite was Total Annihilation. And I did not like some of the stuff that they added in the later expansions, like Core Contingency, because I felt, as we've talked about with expansions for RPGs, that rather than taking the world out, and they did take it out, they added some new unit powers, but mostly they just took it up. That you had these units that just got more and more ridiculously powerful, artillery that got more and more devastating, and pretty soon it just came down to a battle between long-range artillery and super-powered units. But one of the things I liked about Total Annihilation was that you could turn off units individually. So when you start a multiplayer game, you could ban all that stuff and keep it down to the small units and artillery and, you know, the limited range stuff, like the medium-ranged artillery, that made the game interesting. And the AI was surprisingly good. I love the ebb and flow of battles. This game, because of the way it was done, terrain mattered more in this game than any RTS I've ever played before or after. You could pin down whole armies with one gun if you placed it right.
Did you know terrain matters in StarCraft? Like, if you shoot from a lower position to an upper position, you only have, like, a one-quarter chance of actually hitting.
Really?
Yeah, that took me, like, 3 years to figure that out.
That's common a lot. Crush, Kill, and Destroy 2 had that as well. Age of Empires, I think, had that. But this was a game where the whole terrain was rendered in 3D. I mean, you could get, like, a choke point between two mountains where, like, one rapid-fire cannon could change the entire course of battle.
That is very cool.
Or as people were coming into the base, if their units were kind of slow and gummed up on each other, you could spend high-speed units up around behind them and just completely break apart the attack. And it just had a sense of tactics to it that I have never seen before or since in an RTS. That it wasn't just, I take my mob of units and throw them at your mob of units.
I like my mob of units. Thank you very much.
I like my Zerglings.
All right.
Well. All 144 of them.
I've named them.
Yes. You know Dasher and Dancer.
Well, now that we've done RTSs, we tossed out turn-based on the table. John, we'll start
with you. It's almost new shiny glittery factor, but I'm going to go ahead and know myself and say that it's not, and go with Civ 4, because Civ 4 is really, really, really good.
Man, I'd have to go with either Civ 4 or the last of the Age of Wonders games, Age of Wonders against the Shadow Magic, even though the two expansion armies were a little silly.
The two shadow things?
But, however, having said that, and I loved the way that the game played. I loved the random map creation. I agree that the two expansion armies were a little silly, but the things they added to the gameplay made that, for me, what I think was probably one of the best turn-based strategy games I've played.
My favorite was Age of Wonders 1 and 2. They're two totally different games, and they had a totally different play feel. It's one of the few games where you can't say, oh, well, the first one was better because they messed it up in the second one, or that you can't say, well, the second one was better because they improved so much stuff. They made two different games, and they were both good, yet they were both... One was a sequel to another. Right. It wasn't like they were just like some of the Japanese RPGs, where does this even come from?
I liked one more myself, but it was not because two was just this total piece of crap that they screwed up. It was a different game.
Yeah.
I'm going to toss out Lords of Magic, and I will go special edition with the caveat of the multiplayer that they never
fixed. That's the reason. That is what keeps Lomsi off its throne.
You know what?
You just didn't
care
enough.
Listen. The fanaticism with which we tried hours of failed multiplayer games.
If the game had been terrible, I mean, if this had been like a Rage of Mages...
Oh, that game was so awful.
The fact that...
I can't even believe you know that game. It's such obscure reference.
The fact,
I know.
No.
I could have just torn one right here, and it would have been somehow more polite than uttering that. But...
You know, they made a Rage of Mages
2. That's what I own. The Necromancer one.
I own the original.
I own the second one. I've never played it.
So awful.
The is this a PC game?
Yes.
I've never heard
of it. It's the worst thing you've ever played.
It's a PC game the same way that tumors are human flesh.
Okay, I understand.
It's a PC game, and it's not fun.
No.
It's just work.
No, it's not. A barbed wire sodomy is slightly more enjoyable. But... If that's the thing about Lords of Magic Special Edition, or Lomsi as we always called it, if it had been a crappy, steaming pile of a game, I wouldn't have cared that multiplayer didn't work.
Yeah, I could have written it off.
I was so angry because the game was so great, and the multiplayer did not work.
Oh, man.
And we
remember that time when we were trying to get to work, and we got three turns in and nearly had an orgasm before a crash?
We had that, too. We'd think we were doing fine, and then on turn six, it was the end.
Oh.
And we went to Sierra's website multiple times. We wrote them emails pleading them to patch the game. We kept watching it, and all they did was every week, check out this review on how wonderful our game is. Check out this review.
They put out one service update. And the service update was improved multiplayer. And I was like, oh my God. Didn't work. I was like, you bastards. Glad you sold
that
your company.
That is what the Total War people need to do that. Their omission of the strategic level multiplayer is bad and worse as the years go on.
Yes, it is.
Love it.
Oh, you can't play Total War like on the map scale?
No, you can play set army tactical engagements with one another, but you can't actually play the game, which... infuriates Adam and I.
Yeah,
year in and year out.
You know, and
I'm angry for you.
Yeah,
oh, it was so bad. When we unearthed that gem, the disappointment was palpable.
I mean, at least because Civ started out with no multiplayer outside of third party hacks.
Yeah,
and
we did that.
Yeah, Civ 2 then had pretty crappy multiplayer was in there, but by Civ 3, I mean, they got a hint, and multiplayer was a full it was an expansion on Civ 3, Play the World, but. By Civ 3's expansion, then into Civ 4, I mean, they took multiplayer seriously. It shocks me the Total War series has never created a full-fledged multiplayer.
Yeah, it really wouldn't lend itself to the simultaneous turn-based turns like we were talking about earlier.
But there's not that
even
much
there's
not that much to do on the map scales. The map turns go pretty quickly.
Yeah, I don't spend half an hour on the map when I'm playing single-player. So
yeah,
I mean,
I'm not attempting to apologize for them at all. It pisses me off, at least as much as it pisses anyone else of you, but I really would like to see that if they release Rome 2 or Civil War, Total War, or whatever the hell coming out next.
Another great multi-tiered map game
God, Napoleonic Conflicts in a Total War. I would be all over that.
Another multi-level game like that where you had a larger map, a small map, it was great, was Lords of the Realm.
I never played that one.
The most recent sequel sucked.
I thought we did
play
that.
Bad. This would have been, I'm confused now, the most recent one was either 2 or 3.
What did you do in Lords of the Realm? It sounds so familiar.
It took place, I think, in England, if memory serves, during some kind of a power vacuum, and there was like 4 or 5 different factions. There's like a duke
that
and a...
wagon went around the trail?
Yeah, and, there was a trade caravan that went around.
That game had a lot of potential, but it was awful.
You did? I thought it was great. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it for about the 20 minutes I played it, and then it's just like, okay, there's nothing else to do.
Mike and I used to play that game all the time. We had a ton of fun with it. It was great multiplayer. But the most recent one, I can't think whether it's 2 or 3, but the most recent one just absolutely sucks. It's horrible. So they basically took away all your control, that all you do now is just kind of point at a really, really high level. And then
that's always annoying.
All your game, all your little ministers decide how to do everything for you, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Perfect. There's a lot of that in the Caesar series of city managing games. I don't know if any of you guys have played those. But like the challenge is the fact that you can't control what your people are going to do. You just have to set up your economy such that they do it so that
that's
you
by design.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's,
it's infuriating, but it's a challenge. I mean, it's a you got to think.
That's pretty interesting. Right.
You wish you could just click on them and make a move.
I love how happily we look back on the obsessions we've had with these multiplayer games. I can remember sitting in high school, last period of the day, and I get a text message. I'd look at it. Buddy I went to high school with, dude, AOW, you in? Yes, I'm in.
Only if I can have the lizard, man.
No, I never played. I usually played the Hymen.
Oh, that was...
Ah, yes, the Hymen.
I always played the Hymen, teehee.
They get bored after one or two goes.
Undead. Every time, undead.
I was goblins.
Yeah,
I typically play Blizzardman. Not always, but that's what I typically played. Anywho, I actually just thought of something else we talk about with this, but I don't want to belabor this one topic too much, especially since some portion of our listenership does not play video games. But
poor suckers.
We are going to have to come back, maybe next episode, to space strategy games, Space Empires, Masters of Orion.
Galciv.
All right. Dan, what was that one that we used to
Space
play?
Empire.
Space Empire.
Space
all
Empire.
Right, all right,
we'll come
time.
Back to that.
Damn you all. I got to load Galciv 2 when I get back
home.
Right. You guys ever play Space Empire?
No.
No, I did not.
We all played Homo World, though.
So,
all right, anyway,
now that we're moving off that failed effort to not start a topic.
That's a teaser for next week.
Yeah. Between Hyman and Homo World, what else could there be? Please, Dan, save us.
Our RPG topic today is going to be about cliches within a role-playing game. And we are doing a series right now on running particular genre games, like horror games, sci-fi games, fantasy games. And last episode, we talked about doing horror games. And we wanted to take a quick pause before we get on to the next genre, which I think is going to be probably either sci-fi or some subset of sci-fi, to talk about this.
Perchance cyberpunk?
No.
No.
To talk about this particular topic, because this is something that is going to rear its ugly head in absolutely every genre out there. I think the worst offender is going to be fantasy, but it's far from the only offender.
And are they even offenders?
Yes.
Anyway. Maybe.
Well, we'll
let's define the problem
right, we'll get
before
to that.
We start getting into
all
an
right,
argument.
So what are we talking about here? Now, the word that Chad had suggested we use for this is trope. And what a trope is, or to define exactly what we mean by cliche in this context, we are talking about these repeated symbols or motifs or styles that permeate a particular kind of literature. All right, let's give a couple examples. Within fantasy.
Races.
The races. The Tolkien races. Elves are aloof and mysterious.
That's
and
right.
Long-lived.
No elves should exist in any fantasy.
No.
However, dwarves should be in every single
all
fantasy
elves
game
are archers.
Run.
Yeah, all elves are archers or magicians.
But dwarves are better archers.
The
they just don't feel like it.
The dwarves are all Scottish and drink too much and have beards and are afraid of horses and live in mountains looking for valuable metals. Yeah.
They're not afraid of miners. Horses. They just have no use for them.
All adventures begin in the inn.
Yeah. Well, they do.
All wizards are extremely old and very intelligent when they need to be, but also bumbling and socially inept in the scenes between.
Merlin,
Gandalf's
Gandalf,
not bumbling and socially
Dumbledore.
Inept.
Neither is Dumbledore.
Oh,
Dumbledore.
What's the Forgotten Realms
Dumbledore
guy?
Is socially dead.
Elminster.
Elminster, yeah.
There's this great black spot in my mind over that name. I had to dig through there. Science fiction. You could talk about, like, the malevolent AI, the computer that's taken over the world.
Cyberdyne? Uncle Gadget? Why not using your regular parts? You guys have seen that, haven't you?
No.
The robot chicken with Cyberdyne? Oh, my God. After this episode.
All right, we will have to track that down.
Is that season 3?
I think so, yeah.
The Insect Collective. The warrior race with their proud traditions and honor.
But I love the Protoss.
The Predatoss. Versus the Zerglians.
The high-powered alien race that invades, that humanity barely beats off at last minute through clever actions.
I have got to get me one of these.
What is that?
You were coming
from?
Up with pop reference.
ID4.
Independence Day, yeah.
Will Smith. Yeah.
I'm just impressed.
Jeff Goldblum is watching you poop.
You know, I wish I had more of these. That's the end of my list, but I wish I had more because you're speeding up. You're getting faster and faster with these references.
Oh, my God. I got them all, dude.
I'm just curious how far this could go. But
forever.
I'm out of
these.
We
could do the cyberpunk ones.
Except there's nothing beyond the cyberpunk ones. It's a near future, and with corporations have taken over the role of government. Things are raining, and it's kind of dirty. It's cyberpunk!
Everything is set in sprawled LA.
Yes.
So, with this defined, let's now talk about, are these cliches a good thing or a bad thing?
I think they're a thing.
Correct.
I think that they can be overgeneralized, overused, to where the trope becomes a cliche, and saying cliche in its negative context. I think that there are literary devices, too. I think that there are standard frames of literary reference that we can all relate to and we can all come back to and we can all accept as this is the reality of how a certain world works.
I've seen The Old Wizard done, and I've seen The Old Wizard done really well. And then I've seen The Old Wizard done
really
where you
bad.
Afterwards, you're like, wow, that's been done.
Yeah.
I think it's all about presentation.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with both of you guys. I think they can serve a useful function within the story because of the fact that these represent the archetypes and symbols of storytelling, number one, that we are most familiar with, and number two, that probably have some subconscious cultural significance that Harpy and Mick has explained in better detail than we're going to. That, you know, they serve a good and valuable role within storytelling, but there's definitely an extreme. One of the extremes I'd say is I don't like the fact that 90% of fantasy uses Tolkien's exact races.
Right.
And it's not they use the same archetypes like the proud warrior race. I mean, the Klingons and the Zentradi and whatever are all similar, but there's some differences. I mean, it's just the exact same photocopied races carried from one setting to the next.
All dwarves are Scottish and hard drinking. All elves are archers. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's definitely extreme where suddenly you get lazy. And not only are you lazy, but you are damaging your own story because let's say you're starting off a role-playing game and it's in D&D and it begins in the ubiquitous Color Animal Inn. And if that's all you write, chances are you're not going to bother to put a lot of detail in it because everybody knows about the Color Animal Inn.
Yeah.
It has a tavern downstairs and in-rooms upstairs of varying quality, and a stout man who runs the inn who was at one time a great warrior or a great knight in the king's army until he retired to open this inn.
And if the players are bored, bar fight.
Bar fight, exactly. And this degrades your own game.
Hey, this was the opening game for my next campaign. What are you talking about?
But I think you can't avoid them entirely, because if you do, first of all, you're misplacing your energy. You spend so much time trying to be original that you're not writing a good story.
And then no town will have a bar, and then we just can't have
that. Will that fat guy do when he's out of the army? He'll resort to crime.
But also, in addition to the fact that you're kind of misplacing your energy when you do that, you tear down a lot of things that people have come to love in the genres. So I would never suggest that these things should be taken out completely.
Yeah, you take my bar out, there's going to be problems. However, if you were to spice up the bar, maybe make the bartender a woman.
Oh,
maybe make it a high-class bar.
Perhaps name her Violet.
Perhaps with a dress code, maybe?
In a fantasy game?
My characters are all naked. Unless, of course, that is the dress code.
I wear what I'm wearing, and if you don't like it, you'll taste my axe.
Yes.
Is that what you're calling it now?
This just went from a terrible game to a wonderful game.
Yes.
I like how this is developing.
It's more of
I call
jerk
it Glamdring, and it glows when orcs are near.
What? If you tell me it points at magical items, then I'm going to have to rethink your involvement with the podcast.
Oh, it's definitely rolled with the sentient magical items tables. It has a will of its own and quite a charisma score. Not too much dexterity, though.
One of the things that we were kicking around when we were outlining this is whether a genre is simply a collection of tropes.
Yeah.
Like, for example, if I say, what, you know, is, if I hand you a book and say, read it, and I say, when you're done, is this sci-fi? is ultimately what you're doing is measuring this book up against a long list of many tropes.
Yes.
I think so.
I think so, too.
Excellent.
We all agree on something.
Fear the Booth.
Sound the alarm.
This is our last show, so thanks a lot for listening.
Yeah.
I love it when we all agree, because it's...
I hate it when
blah,
we all
blah,
agree.
Blah, 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 this. Yes, 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 silence.
Yeah, we're not used to that. Yeah. We're all of us are ready to defend our points and to fight this, and there's nothing there.
Well, I don't like it when this happens.
Sometimes, let's go with sci-fi. That's what we're using.
Yeah.
The variation within can be so great as to make one end of it indistinguishable. Take 2001 versus Star Wars. Do they both adhere to the same tropes? Well, yes, there's the blackness of space. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, that's about it.
Personally, I don't consider Star Wars sci-fi. I consider it more fantasy. But with sci-fi elements, I consider it heavy fantasy with sci-fi elements.
Yeah, it probably is more accurately considered that. But there is a fantastic sci-fi, and then there scientific sci-fi.
Just like there is in fantasy, there's a high fantasy and a low fantasy.
Yeah, there is an everyone is dying and has boils on their nether regions fantasy, and then there is a the magical ye old realm fantasy.
Yeah.
And they're not the same thing.
There's so many boils in your other fantasy realm, though.
I don't like that fantasy.
I don't either.
I'm almost kind of curious to see what's going on.
Wait until my next
so
game.
Many boils?
Which animal spreads those?
Oh.
Arkansas
the Gathering.
Okay, let me pull this back. Dan, since all of us can't seem to come up with something, why do you think, or do you think, that a genre is a collection of tropes? Give us some examples.
Well, I absolutely do, and I don't know per se that I can give you an example, but...
Seems right.
Okay, because the only other thing I could come up with that maybe defines genre would be period of history. Steampunk takes place in the Wild West, sci-fi takes place in the future, fantasy takes place in the past. But I don't think that's entirely true. Because, okay, Star Wars, granted, was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, blah, blah, blah. But nonetheless,
I thought it.
The world is futuristic. Yeah. I mean, you get the sense that...
Yeah, there's technology and spaceships.
Even though it's supposed to happen 10,000 years ago, or I don't know what year they put on this, but whatever time in the past, when you look at this movie, if you had not seen that intro of a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, your presumption would probably be, this is the distant future. But with Star Wars, despite having that futuristic appearance, nonetheless, as Chad said, it's arguably fantasy. And so I don't necessarily know that period of history is a good way of defining genre. So what does define genre? Well, it's the emotions and the feel, and it's these common elements, like within fantasy, the presence of larger-than-life heroes and the presence of magic. Mm-hmm. And once again, I know these aren't consistent in every story, but every story has some of these. They're not going to have all these tropes, but every story has some of these. And that's how you measure a genre. And that's why you can watch something like Star Wars thinking it's in the far future, yet still walking away saying this is fantasy. Because you saw those persistent elements in there. Mm-hmm. You have Obi-Wan Kenobi as the Merlin-type wizard, and you have the dark...
You have the Dark Knight.
Yeah,
all of his armor and such.
And you have the peasant rising up to become sword-wielding knight who saves the world, in this case, the galaxy.
Have the honorable rogue.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And who gets increasingly honorable as the decades go by and the revisions get issued.
So I think genre absolutely is a collection of tropes. Now, as you're trying to write up a role-playing game, if you're trying to avoid these particular cliches and you start looking around to what other people are saying, for example, I looked at a science fiction list, a list of tropes within science fiction, and this list just scrolled and scrolled and scrolled. And by the time I got to the bottom, I pretty much had the sense there was no story left to tell.
Yeah.
And so... I want to just warn people that don't go out there and look. If someone else says, oh, that rips off Star Wars, that doesn't mean, therefore, you cannot or should not use it.
That's my biggest complaint with the militant, rabid Star Wars fanboys. It's like anytime you mention, oh, well, I like this one kind of movie or I like this book, they're just like, oh, well, that just ripped off Star Wars. It's like, no, not everything in the face of the planet rips off Star Wars.
And I think also alongside that, a lot of times people confuse literary devices or storytelling structures with these, you know, this lack of originality. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, you have an unlikely hero who rises up to save things. You're just ripping that off, or that's just a tired old whatever. It's like, well, no, I mean, not necessarily. And, well, you have a dark villain. Well, that's just, you know, how unoriginal is that? And blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I have a light villain.
Yes. And I have a likely hero.
Yeah, I have a likely hero.
Everyone expected this man to win, and he did. And
yeah, in my story.
Book signing next Tuesday.
In my story, an extremely powerful nation smashes a vaguely evil, but not really all that bad, smaller nation. Yeah. What kind of story is this? I mean, that's
it's called the 5-page masterpiece.
So
I'd play it.
Don't let people stress you out.
Or
too
it's
far
called
with
What
this.
Happened to Belgium?
The vaguely evil Belgium. Those neutral beer drinking bastards.
Take that with your waffles.
You done over there?
Oh, Belgium.
You know, I think with these cliches, you've got to have a sort of balance that you can't avoid them completely, but and you shouldn't avoid them completely for reasons that we just gave. But I think you should try to avoid letting these things carry the story. When we were kicking this around before, the best phrase that I was able to come up with is that the problem with these cliches is not their presence, it's their density.
Yeah.
That when you start off in Color Animal Inn and you go out to save the maiden and with you comes
and
the old...
And it was a dark and stormy night.
Yeah, and with you comes the old wizard and you are the unlikely hero and...
And you've got the elf who is the archer with the two panthers and the...
Right.
Ugh.
At some point... this
so
whole,
now that you've mentioned the two panthers, Adam is peaked.
But, you know, at some point, this not any one of these things that's the issue. It's all of them that are together. And... If you are running a game, and when you are setting it up, you are trying to avoid letting your game become too burdened with these, you may not be able to control everything that enters into the game. Because, for example, let's say I'm running Forgotten Realms, I can't control what the setting is. You know, Forgotten Realms is written. I'm running what's there.
You can change it, but then it's not so much Forgotten Realms anymore.
Right. Well, the one thing I found that can help is to get creative with the setting through the power of nitpicking. That, for example, when I play a dwarf in the Forgotten Realms as an NPC, I don't put forward as his obvious traits that he has a beard and carries an axe and has a Scottish accent and blah, blah, blah. Instead, I'll look through the description they have of dwarves. And, like, for example, in the Forgotten Realms, the dwarves are a diminishing race. And the dwarves as a diminishing race had all this stuff going on with one of their gods who was trying to bring back their population. And so instead I may play up a sense of quiet desperation or a sense of nervousness about them or whatever. I mean, that may not be the best example, but you can find other things in the description to play up rather than falling back on the easy stereotypes.
You know what? Something that you did there that I liked was you didn't take the stereotype and then just do the opposite.
Yes.
Well, there's a beardless
yeah.
dwarf.
And
whoa!
He loves elves and horses. It's
a, boy, that's the tallest dwarf I've ever
it's
seen.
It's a beardless, well-educated, teetotaling dwarf from Ireland.
Oh, no! But yeah, I do that with my PCs sometimes, Dan. Like, I realized I was creating a jolly trickster sort of happy-go-lucky guy one time, and I started to roll him up as a halfling, and I thought, wait, if I roll this, he's just going to be halfling in the same way that Phytor is Phytor. So I made him a human, and he's actually taken seriously.
What you guys are bringing up is a really good point, that different is not necessarily good. That, like you said, I really want to stress what you're saying, because I've seen this done in too many forms of entertainment, role-playing games included.
I think we've done it ourselves
yeah,
in games and characters.
I'm sure
we
have, where you want to be original, so all you do is you take the opposite of mm-hmm. everything.
Right, well, this goes back to our freak show character, but I think what the important thing to learn is it's in the presentation.
Yeah.
Like, what you stressed was what you thought was more important than the beard and the drinking and the mm-hmm. accent.
How would you recommend, just to kind of wrap this one up, how would you recommend going about setting up a good balance between the convention that is necessary to tell the story and necessary to help the readers or the players understand it, and the originality that's necessary to keep the game lively and interesting and just avoid all the tired, worn-out ideas of the particular genres.
I think if you lined out every single cliche that you had going in your campaign, you can identify them and then find some way to take an alternative stab at it, like playing up certain characteristics as opposed to just playing the stereotypes. You could do that, I don't know, maybe mm-hmm. every other one.
Yeah. Or even try to just take a cliche or a trope or something and change it out for something different, a different trope from maybe another genre.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, actually. In On Writing, Stephen King says that's a lot of what he does. He will take two things that have been completely beat to crap, but never have been put on top of one another, and make a story about it.
Right.
And obviously, he's very, very successful.
Oh my God, Dark Tower forever! Continue.
Well, sometimes at work, and like with Dark Tower, sometimes it doesn't.
Did not just say that. I'm going to run you off the road on the way home.
With a van.
Oh, shut up. You know, that dude's dead.
Yeah.
The wrath of God came upon him just bare months after.
The wrath of God or some dark power opposed.
I think he, like, had a stroke earlier in life or something, and then complications later on.
Good. Man, I was out of town when I heard that Stephen King had been hit by the van, and this was right after he had written the fourth book, and I was like, holy crap, if Stephen King dies before he finishes this series, I'm going to go on a murdering spree.
You know, the best advice I could give on this subject is to self-critique heavily. Mm-hmm. When you watch a movie, if they're just using tired conventions, when you walk away from that movie, you can say, wow, that was crap because all it had was tired conventions. Whereas you can go see another movie and the storytelling between those conventions is so good you don't even notice them.
Yeah.
And I'd say just have the ability to do that with your own game, that just be able to look at your own game notes or think through what you have in your head or whatever your particular GMing style is. And if you can just look at it and see for yourself, look, all I'm doing is the same tired crap that's done again and again and again. Maybe it's time to rethink the whole thing.
Yeah. You know what? Actually, taking your entire campaign and giving a short synopsis of where you want it to go to someone who is not in your gaming group, it'd probably really help you out here. Because they don't know what you're trying to get at, but when you start talking and explaining it to them, they'll be like, oh, you mean like in this movie? And you're like, oh, yeah, I guess I kind
of
do mean like
and of course, you can't get away from that entirely, because I guarantee you somebody has a reference for everything. The human race is very old and has written a lot of things. And chances are you are not going to come up with anything somebody hasn't done before.
Right, well, the obscurity of the reference they draw is a good thing.
Exactly. So, I think that's a good idea. Or even if you don't know anyone you can show it to, because like maybe you don't want to show it to your friends because they are your gaming group and you don't want to ruin it. But if you just write it down and look at it yourself or show it to somebody who's not a gamer, it may help you as well, because I have found that a lot of ideas sound really good when you say them in your head, but when you actually write them down and start thinking through their consequences and where they ultimately lead, the whole thing starts to sound a whole lot more stupid than it did before.
It was just like that in the example I gave in the last episode about the Seasons game, about where I had this whole plot lined out, and my players were like, oh, well, I think the plot's going to go like this and this and this, and then I'm like, oh my God, I had to change it. Well, when they went, oh, it's like this and this and this, they also said at the end, yeah, it wouldn't be like that because that's really stupid and overdone. And I'm just like, oh, God.
Actually, you need to watch.
And they were right.
You need to watch it with the Seasons game, because you have talked about that one game so much. I actually have gotten some emails from people who are on board with us on the I Hate the Gaming Stories train, who are now saying, okay, we've heard about this too much without knowing the details. You need to do a bonus episode and explain the Seasons game.
No.
So, fair warning, if you want to dodge that bullet, we need to draw deeper into the hat.
I think the reason why we draw in the Seasons game so much is, A, it was really good.
Yeah. We could just as easily say, with it. During a positive gaming experience we had.
But the other reason was, it was the most recent full long campaign with that group that we had played
during the Vivaldi theme game that we had.
We played
we had a 16th note.
Nice
fall.
Oh wait, I get it. Keep going.
I think
good. At least I wasn't the last one.
Screw you guys.
Though in my haste there, I mispronounced Vivaldi and put an E in there somehow. But anyway, I think also part of it is that this is one of the games that you guys have done together. I have a lot of gaming history, tons of long and successful campaigns, that until we added Mike to the show, there was not a single other person behind the mics who would know a damn thing about them, since Chad, you and I were gaming separately for so long. So I had nothing to add because I'd be sitting out there on my own. But just fair warning on that. So anything else on convention and originality? And
Let me just reaffirm that I don't want to do a bonus episode where we do gaming stories and or record a gaming session. We just reaffirm that, put that on the table, because every time someone asks, I have to post.
You know, there's someone out there that is going to dictate a topic to us.
He does wield a great, mighty, and terrible power.
Don't provoke him, please.
Don't give him ideas.
There are probably about four subjects I don't want to podcast about. And
I know one of the other ones.
I'm not going to tell you what the other two are either.
One is how much The Dark Tower is an awful, awful book.
See, that podcast is just wrong.
Yeah, I know. We've committed to a 60-minute length. I mean, that's...
That's right.
All right. Well, I think the basic advice here is just to keep in mind that these conventions are useful.
Tropes aren't bad things.
Yeah, they're not bad things. They're only bad things when there's too many of them.
And, or they're too dull and basic. You have to dress them up a little. Right.
So just remember, watch the density. Don't try and get rid of them completely. And don't let people spook you just because they say, oh, well, you rip off this or that. Because guess what? I can do that with any story on the face of the earth if you give me long enough. So I think that's about it for this episode. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Booth. This show is copyright 2007, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in the show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to FearTheBoot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at FearTheBoot.com.